Cool. Yo, this is Ethan from Gentrification R Us, and you are listening to Juicebox Music Podcast. Oh, really? You're listening to a podcast. Cool. Hello, and welcome to Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock, and with me, shedding some blood in negative space, on the other line, Nick Moreau.
Hey, Hunter.
How you doing, Nick?
Good. Good.
How was your Super Bowl Sunday? I haven't talked to you since the big game happened.
Oh, it was great. It was great. We went to a good party, you know, enjoyed some traditional Super Bowl foods.
And by traditional Super Bowl foods, what do you mean?
Well, you always have wings, it seems. Okay. Many dips.
dips are essential.
Yes. Some with layers. Many different kind of chips. That's basically what we had for the Super Bowl.
My mom was in town, and she made some amazing macaroni and cheese. I was at my brother's house, and they made some carnitas.
Ooh,
you know, so all the food groups were represented.
Yeah, there we go. No, it was great. I actually had a good time watching the game.
Yeah, me too. I this is honestly probably the first full football game I've watched this entire season, but it was a really good one to watch.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Did you have a horse in the race?
We did, I don't know if you're familiar with the game where you put your name on squares. And you pay $1 per square. You ever heard of that game?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
So you have 10, it's a square of 10 squares, and you pay $1 per square. So as a party, you basically say, hey, we're going to put $5 each, and you put your initials in a square, and then you randomize numbers for the x-axis and the y-axis.
Okay, now I'm completely lost. There's an X, there's a Y axis and an X. What's going on? This sounds like geometry right here. I thought we were talking about.
Basically, there's no skill involved. You pick squares, put money on them, and then you randomize the, numbers on the left side and on the top side of the square that is now divided into 10 columns and 10 rows, which makes 100 squares within a big square. Does that make sense?
So we're talking about the Eagles and the Patriots, right? We're talking about the football game that happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then each person in the party, like we started with $5 each, and each square you put your initials, and that's worth $1. And after all the squares are filled out with initials, you randomize the basically each row and each column has a number from 0 to 9. So let's say in one side says Eagles, the other side says Patriots. And so at the end of the first quarter, if you happen to have, I don't know what, can't remember the score, but if it was 15-12 for the Eagles, so you look for a number 15, look at the last digit, 5, and then you look for the number 2 in the Patriots, and whoever had that square wins, you know, a quarter of the prize.
Okay, remind me not to go to your Super Bowl party next year. I have no idea what's going on there. So did you win anything?
I did. I won one quarter, and I won the final score, so I got like $60. It's pretty good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, this is a music podcast, so what did you think about the halftime show? This year we had Justin Timberlake making his bold return after his cameo during Janet Jackson's show. I don't know how many years ago was that now. I want to say
2004? No.
Like 2006?
No, it was before that. It was before that. Yeah, it was
whenever his first album came out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the halftime show where there was a lot of performers, remember? There was like Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake. There was like 4 or 5 pretty big stars. I think Usher showed up. I feel like it was that one.
Sounds familiar. I did not see that Super Bowl in real time. I saw the halftime show later when everybody was talking about it. But
I definitely saw it in real time because my dad was sitting next to me. what did I think of this one? I actually kind of liked the halftime show. I'm usually not that impressed by them, but I was just kind of impressed of the logistics of the whole thing. And I know the logistics are a big deal every time, but it felt like he was just going from stage to stage, singing the hits. I don't really care what songs he sang. It just kind of sounded, I mean, it's really, really a medley of like 30 seconds of one song going into another song.
From what I remembered, he played about 20, 30 seconds of his newest single I guess it was the first single released off his new album, and that's the only new song he played. So yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. I thought we'd see a little bit more Man in the Woods promotion going on during his halftime set. Man in the Woods being the name of his new album released this past week.
Well, I mean, he definitely promoted it during the show. You see his outfit? I mean, it was clearly Man in the Woods.
Clearly, because he, you know, growing up being on the Mickey Mouse show, he was a man of the woods his whole life. He uses that, you know, the whole I'm from Memphis thing to his advantage in this case, which I guess makes sense. I think he's changing gears now after so many accusations of cultural appropriation. So he's deciding to take that white Southern culture and turn it into something.
I guess so. What did you think? So we were told no hologram for Prince, and then it wasn't a hologram. It was the white sheet with the. What did you think? Did you think it was a good tribute? Did you think it was?
Look, I think if you're playing the Super Bowl halftime show in Minneapolis, you have to pay tribute to Prince, especially somebody like Justin Timberlake. And I was surprised by the backlash when it was announced that he was going to do some kind of tribute to Prince, because that seems only natural to me.
Right.
And I would think that, I mean, I never knew Prince, but I would think that he would appreciate his presence at such an event. He was a huge sports fan, big Vikings fan, Timberwolves, WNBA fan. I mean, I thought the tribute was fine. I think the whole thing was played very safe, which makes sense. There's, you know, football has a lot of controversy lately. Colin Kaepernick, people kneeling. It's a game that has a wide audience. And I think he was a very safe choice to play, even though there was some danger, you know, the controversy that had happened before in the past. I don't think you really had to worry about a repeat of that, right? So it seemed like a very safe choice. I thought he was fine. I thought the whole show was okay. I was surprised by how little singing it seemed like he was actually doing.
Yeah, but do you think, I mean, okay, I have more thoughts now. Like, what was the last time you had a halftime show where you were blown away? I didn't get to see the Michael Jackson one, and I've seen it since.
Prince.
Yeah, it was Prince. Okay.
I think that was 2000 and I want to say 2007?
Yeah, maybe.
Something like that. I think about 11 years ago. And it was amazing. He did. He covered Best of You by Foo Fighters. He also, I think one thing I did like and appreciate about the Prince tribute that Justin Timberlake did was the white sheet was a homage to Prince's halftime performance. He used a sheet like that for a lot of the performance. It had his, you know, cymbal guitar very phallically sticking out behind the sheet. Actually, they showed a little bit of that in Justin Timberlake's performance. So I thought it was a nice little throwback to that. That was my favorite part of the halftime show.
I thought it was pretty tasteful. I thought it looked really good. He looked a little stiff, like he was just not moving the way you see him move. Is that something you saw as well? Or
I thought his dancing looked pretty good, but I mean, I'm roughly, I think he's just slightly older than me, and I can see how maybe he can't keep up with the same dance moves that he once did. You know, he's been out of the public eye for a little while. He really took a break between these last couple albums.
Yeah, playing golf.
Yeah, I don't know what does he do? Hang out with Marc Gasol? I don't know.
Yeah, one thing he did say apparently, I guess, as he said, is he would never let his son play football.
Wow, shots fired! Super Bowl halftime performer.
Exactly.
Yeah, there was a lot of buildup. I thought that, you know, ultimately it was fine. People were acting like it was the worst idea in the world to have Justin Timberlake perform at halftime. And, I thought it was safe, but I thought it it did the trick. And I feel the same way. I listened to Man in the Woods a couple times this week, and you know, a lot of the reviews of the album are very negative. Yeah. And there is some pretty bad stuff on there, but on the whole, it sounds decent to me. I thought I don't really have any issue with his music.
Yeah, but you don't come from a place that probably has a strong opinion of his music. Like, you don't really care, right? It's not.
He has some great songs, and I don't think there are any great songs on this new album. But it wasn't super offensive for me to listen to, I guess I should say.
Yeah, he played all the great songs last night.
For the most part, that was about it. Yeah. Yeah, he covered the bases. I was hoping for a Britney duet.
It would have been cool if what if he brought up Janet? That would have been amazing.
That would have been amazing, but he has some blood on his hands with Janet Jackson, and I don't know if she wants to put herself in that position to just be kind of assisting him on this moment. I think she needs the moment for herself.
Right. That makes sense.
She's kind of in the middle of a little comeback right now, and I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
All right, what else is going on in the news this week, Nick?
Well, we've covered a few festival lineups since we've started this podcast. And we have a new one that I think is something that I'd love to discuss. The Primavera Sound released their lineup. This is their festival in Barcelona. And as it is most years, to me, this lineup seems pretty excellent. What do you think?
Primavera kills it every year. I know neither of us have been to this festival yet, but every year the lineup comes out and it has us salivating.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this year, the big headliners, Arctic Monkeys, making their comeback after at least 3 years mm-hmm. off the road now. Bjork, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, The National, The War on Drugs, Lord. The list goes on and on for this festival. And it also feels fresh in a way because some of these headliners are a little new, or at least in the States, we haven't seen quite these combinations.
Yeah, I mean, other, you know, notable ones, Vince Staples, Fever Ray that we talked about last week, mm-hmm. Slow Dive. You know, on our top, all those on our top tens of last year, Grizzly Bear, Charlotte Gainsbourg, and her mom, Jane Birkin.
Wow.
This is the first mom daughter billing.
You think they're going to get the Surge hologram out for this?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Maybe if it was in France, in Spain, so.
Yeah. Rye, which we're going to talk about this week. Deer Hunter. I mean, look, Deer Hunter is what, on the last day. This is great.
I hope Deer Hunter has some new music to promote, but they tend to play festivals and dates sporadically, even when they don't have new music.
Yeah. I also noticed they have Cal Dixon and Michael Stein performing the music of Stranger Things, which is pretty cool. You know,
those are actors from the show.
No, these are the actual composers of the sound.
Oh, okay. I think I had heard something about cast members of that show playing music, but I'm not a Stranger Things head, so I don't know what's going on in that world.
Come on. I wish we could go.
Yeah, me too. What are we doing?
You know, we haven't even mentioned Belle and Sebastian as Spiritualized playing with an orchestra and a choir.
The last time I saw Spiritualized, they played with an orchestra doing Ladies and Gentlemen Floating in Space. It was the opening of the restored Ace Hotel here in downtown Los Angeles, and it was increíble.
Yeah, Wolf Parade, still under, I guess, comeback tour. I'm in. I mean, this is great. If you happen to be in Barcelona or around there the weekend, I guess it would be Memorial Day in the States, but May 30th to June 2nd, And you know, typically the tickets to this festival are pretty cheap compared to American festivals.
And I noticed that, and it's also the 28th of May to the 3rd of June. I mean, that's long.
It's always long. It's always long.
Just a week of partying on the beach in Barcelona. It sounds good great. To me.
Yeah. I think, you know, the early bird tickets, I can't remember, but I tried to go last year, and at the time, it was under 200 euros.
So that's way cheaper than Coachella.
Yeah. And you're in Barcelona on the beach.
Right. not bad.
No, not bad.
Well, let's see what we can do this year then. Yeah. But I think we're going to make this the official festival of Juicebox Music Podcast, at least so far in 2017. If you can only go to one, this is the one.
So far, this is the one.
So far. Excellent. What else have you been listening to this week besides the albums we're about to review?
Yeah, so earlier in the year, we talked about our most anticipated albums of the year. And I mentioned the band The Soft Moon. And although we're not reviewing it this week, I did listen to the album a few times. This is their fourth album, or his fourth album. The Soft Moon is really a project led by Luis Vasquez, and he gets kind of a band together to tour. So I would say it's his fourth album, called Criminal. It's also his first album on Sacred Bones, I believe. So a little departure there. And I'd say, you know, I was really looking forward to it. And I think if you like The Soft Moon, it's just kind of more of the same. And I was kind of hoping for something different. Also part of me just feels that Zeros and the third one, the name escapes me, were a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I just, you know, it's just four albums that are very similar at this point. So, it's still good in the realm of, you know, The Soft Moon is good, but, maybe I'm getting a little tired of it. I don't know.
From what it sounds like to you, it's recommended if you like The Soft Moon, but maybe check out one of their earlier releases first.
Yeah, I think Zeros is, that's his second album, and I think that's the better one.
Anything else?
Yeah. So after our discussion last week, we reviewed Krungbin's Con Todo El Mundo. I kind of went on a deep dive and started listening to a lot of Cambodian and Thai funk. I found and maybe we'll post them, but I found some, related to the band. There's been a lot of articles written about their influences, and a lot of them list some bands and some songs. So maybe I'll post them on juiceboxmusicpod.com and to give some of the stuff I've been listening to. But there is a set of compilations that if you do have Apple Music, you can find. It's released by Pebbles, and they released something called Original Artifacts from the Psychedelic Era.
Okay.
And so it's volumes, and there's so far at least 17 volumes.
Wow.
And
each volume, like a party.
Each volume is a different country or continent, meaning that volume 3, for example, is Africa. But you know, there's Thailand part one, Thailand part two, Cambodia part one, Cambodia part two. And some of these are really, really good. I mean, it's really fun to put on, and kind of really makes you appreciate that era, and really makes you want to kind of explore it even more. So I'm in.
Great. That sounds awesome. I'd like to check that out myself. We got two albums up for you this week here on Juicebox. First one is Blood by Rye. Mm. This is a Los Angeles band by way of Canada, by way of Ontario, Canada, putting out their sophomore release. I have the music of Rye.
I think the easiest comparison, Hunter, is it would be Sade to me. Like if you say, "Oh, it sounds like Sade," it's kind of spot on.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, I definitely think so.
But it's an R&B. So Rye is R&B. It's a male vocal, but in a really interesting falsetto.
Very androgynous vocals.
Yeah. I'd say, you know, in less straight forward terms, I think it's pretty sexy, you know? Like, it's very sensual. I think it's obviously beautiful. If you've listened to any of, like, Woman, their first album, or Blood, it's got some elements, I think, of either, like, the XX or a little bit of James Blake, a little bit. Mm-hmm. So if you put Sade, but James Blake producing it / singing some of it, you know, it kind of gives you a vibe of what maybe Rye is going for. Yeah, that's my best attempt.
I was surprised to see that it had been 5 years since their debut, Woman, was released.
What? 5 years?
Yeah, 5 years, 2013. Oh. Wow. I really liked Woman a lot. That was an album that I played all the time, and I did get to catch them live on that tour. I noticed that Woman was the work of a duo. Mm-hmm. Michael Meloche was based here in Los Angeles, and then his partner Robin Hannibal, a mm-hmm. Dutch producer who is no longer with the group. He actually left right as their first album was released, very quietly. I think they tried to not make it a big deal in the press because the record was doing so well, and didn't want to kind of display anything but a united front at the time.
Yeah. I remember when I think it was right before the album came out, there was a lot of buzz about the band. They were releasing these songs kind of like a couple singles, just, and everybody was just kind of wondering, who is this band? Do you remember that? It was,
yeah, there's early singles like The Fall, mm-hmm. and Open.
Yeah.
And they had no kind of, you only saw images of women's bodies or mm-hmm. these stark black and white, beautiful images. You didn't have any idea if this was a band, if this was a man or a woman, where this music was coming from.
Yeah.
So now we're here, 2018, 5 years later, they're back with their second release. It's now Michael Meloche, the vocalist, with the live band that he had been touring with on the first album, making the second record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not entirely sure that this album actually exists, because I've been listening to it all week, but I'm not even sure that it's there. Like, when I go back to it, I couldn't sing to you a single hook from the album or anything that really is sticking with me when I'm not listening to it. But that really? Said, when it is on, I do enjoy it.
Mm.
Although it does make me want to listen to Sade more than anything.
Okay. Yeah. You see, I can, like, right now I can sing one of the hooks in my head. So I don't think I'm exactly quite there. I know what you're saying. It's very, it could be seen as a very passive album. Like, you could have it in the background and not even notice it. I actually think I like it better than Woman.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's more introspective. I think the themes are, I don't know. It feels like, Meloche is kind of, you know, going through something as he's writing this album, and I can really feel it. It's I don't know, especially the first two songs, I think it's, what is it, Waste, and second song, I think is it Taste? Something like that.
I think so.
Man, like, those songs, like Waste, the opening, wow, so beautiful when those strings kick in. The second song has got this really cool groove, which is like kind of the first time you're like, oh, if you've never listened to Rye and you hear that song first, you'll be like, okay, Sade, here we go. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe I've spent a lot more time with this album, maybe. I liked Woman. I just think I was really ready for this. I don't know why, but I really immediately loved it. You know, they released, I think, 4 songs as a preview, and I loved every one of them. I think I was really excited to listen to the album, and I fell in love. I also think we found the second great cooking album of 2018. Where Krungbin, you would have maybe made something a little messy because you're dancing the whole time. This feels a little more meticulous. You're going to care about the mise en place and the presentation. One more time for more taste. See me fall from your eyes to your waist. One more time for more taste. I treat this wine from your sweet, from your kiss. Feel your love and feel your faithful wings. See me fall from your eyes. I love this album.
That's a good point. I did not have a chance to do any cooking to this album this week.
I cooked to it just tonight. it was great. It was a fantastic experience. I recommend anybody should cook to this album. I also have a hot take that if you're listening in the future right now and you're born between 2018 and 2022, there's a 30% chance Rye was one of the reasons you were born.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, to me, they seem like they're kind of checking baby-making boxes on this album.
Oh, man, it's baby-making music for sure.
Like, I get the sound, you know, I just, the sentiment from the lyrics, I didn't buy it in the same way I did on the first album. And I don't know if that is a product of them. They have an instantly recognizable sound, even though it sounds so much like Sade. You know, I can tell the difference between his voice and her voice, obviously. And I wonder if it's a case of having such a recognizable honed sound that it can't help but just feel like more of the same. But when I listened to those early singles from the first album, Woman, like Open and The Fall, I'm getting something from those that I don't know if I get anywhere on the new one, but I also wonder if that is because those are my first exposure to Rye.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, if I had heard some of these new tracks and that was the first time I'd ever heard Rye, I might fall in love with them in the same way that I did with some of those songs off Woman.
Well, I understand that too, because I think when Rye came out originally, when those singles came out, it was out of left field. You were like, oh, Jesus, what? Like
who is this?
Who is this? And I love this. Also, like, yeah, it sounds a little bit like Sade, but nobody does Sade that good.
Also, Sade puts out an album every 10 years if we're lucky, so.
Yeah. Exactly. And so
she's not really the game, so to speak.
I think that, you know, what happened with Rye initially, I don't have any proof. I just think from personal experience, it was something that I would not typically love. And I ended up loving it from the first listen. Like, this is when Woman came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was, I suppose that might have happened to a lot of people. And I think maybe to you, you listened to The Fall and Woman and you remember that experience. I think I've spent a lot of time with this album, if I include the 4 songs that were pre-released. And I don't think I spent as much time with Woman. I listened to it for maybe 2 months total in the year. But I've listened to this pretty heavily ever since those songs came out.
Yeah, thinking about it now, I listened to Woman a ton when it came out. Mm-hmm. And I kind of hadn't thought about Rye in a while, and that's, it's starting to make more sense now that I realize it's been 5 years since the release of that album. 5 years in the 2010s is like, feels like 200. So, you know,
well, I mean, just the thought that 2013 was 5 years ago makes me really sad.
Oh man. another world.
Yeah.
I will say, I thought they were really great live back then, and I'm sure their show is great now. And I can kind of, I feel a little bit more organic instrumentation on this album.
I agree.
And yeah, and it definitely sounds like the work of a band and not sort of a bedroom project.
Yeah. I also think, and well, we might get into this a little later, this is a sophomore album that I keep thinking about. If I saw Rye right now live, I'd have these two albums that would actually make an amazing set, because they're a little different, right? And it would allow you to kind of have some dimension from like that bedroom feel that you were talking about to like a more organic feel. I don't know. It'd be like a more fleshed out, more mature live sounding set to me. It's how we live. It's tough to stay away. Yeah. Just say another way. You wanna lay low. You wanna stay safe. Let's make a home. Mm-hmm. You know, as we record these podcasts, I think about how we're not critics, right? We're music fans. And I like to think about the albums that we review as how I would experience it live. And
yeah,
Blood, in the context of that, makes me think that the show, I would be really excited to see Rye live with Blood and Woman out.
Yeah, I'm trying to even remember seeing them on the first record, because they only had that, I think they may have done one cover or something like that, and then played most of that album.
Yeah, they must have had 10 songs, right?
Exactly. And I had no idea at the time that they weren't a duo anymore. I mean, I was surprised to see that their first album got to 55 on the charts here in the US, which is pretty good. They have a real fan base, and I maybe their songs are better suited for a mainstream audience. They sound good in, I'm sure they sound great while you're like shopping at H&M.
Yeah.
Or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to see if this album does anything more for them. But yeah, I think I mean, I agree with you. I would definitely go see them play live again. I enjoy the experience of listening to this album very much, but I don't hold on to much of anything when it's not on.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, this one's going to be, I think, something I'm going to want to see live. I think it's something that's going to stay with me. It's something I'm going to want to cook to. So those are the albums I listen to the most, to Definitely. Be honest, because I do a lot of that. and also, you know, just think about your Saturday morning, you're making breakfast, put it on, it's peaceful. It's great. I mean, it's a pretty great experience listening to this album.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's our review of Blood by Rye. We're a little mixed there, but I think we'll see. I think I'll try cooking to that this week, and I'll let you know how it goes.
And think about what you cooked after. You know, really dig into that.
Okay. hopefully something nice and bloody.
Yeah.
Our second review this week is the third album from the Leeds, UK-based band Hookworms. Mm-hmm. Don't Google that, by the way. It's disturbing, especially on Google Images.
Yeah. you remember this album, that? Yeah.
Exactly. So this album is called Microshift. A little background on Hookworms. They're a band based out of Leeds. They are a project that works out of a home studio that has been home to a lot of bands on the UK indie scene. I mean, tons of great albums have been recorded in this studio and the lead singer, MJ, singer, synth player in Hookworms, at the helm of several releases as well. He actually produced the album that we reviewed last week by the Spook School. at this studio. So this band is kind of a central figure in the music scene in the entire country, I'd say, of the UK. They're not based in London, so that gives them a little bit of that makes them a little more interesting to me, really, because all these bands come to them or come to their studio to record. This is the follow-up to their second album, The Hum, and their first album, Pearl Mystics, which was like a pretty breakout release, a noisy kind of droney album that had some hooks and some really cool songs buried in a lot of stuff. But it got them a lot of attention. I think it's a really good album. I never really got into their second release, The Hum, very much. I listened to it a couple of times. It didn't sound as fresh to me as their first album when it came out. And I kind of didn't spend much time with it. But now here we're on this third album, Micro Shift. What do you think? Do you think this album is a micro shift in the sound for Hookworms?
Nice setup, Hunter. Nice setup.
Getting better at this, you know what I mean?
Listen, I'm going to sound like the guy who loves everything. I'll answer your question. Micro Shift, yeah, it's definitely a shift in the sound of Hookworms. I think that's undeniable. To me, my first impression of it is this sounds like a DFA Records release.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, that was when I first heard the lead single, Negative Space. I actually Googled it to make sure that I thought the band Factory Floor, that's actually a UK band that's on DFA Records, had produced the album because the first single sounded like a Factory Floor song. Mm-hmm. But if there were actually vocals by Hookworms. But it's not. But it does have a more dance feel. And I read that they kind of realized that there was more to making music than guitars and noise/psychedelic music. And they discovered that, I think, playing kind of a show with a techno producer or a DJ. So the production feels really different. I want to go back on Pearl Mystic. Pearl Mystic was, like you said, a breakout. I think it was on a lot of people's top tens when it came out, I think in 2013 or so.
Yeah, a lot of, and especially in the UK press, it was number one on quite a few lists.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the US, a few blogs like Brooklyn Vegan and Drowned in Sound had it as number one as well. The reason I wanted to go back is The Hum. I actually really like The Hum too. And I recently, as we were preparing for this, I listened to Pearl Mystic and The Hum back to back. And The Hum is kind of a classic, solid sophomore follow-up where, if you remember, bands like Interpol released Antics, which felt like kind of a B-side or like a continuation of Turn on the Bright Lights.
Yeah, I would think that or Room on Fire by The Strokes is kind of that thing.
Right, and so The Hum feels like that, right? It feels like a continuation to me of Pearl Mystic. There's not, it's very similar in sound. So if you love Pearl Mystic, you'll love The Hum in a way. Micro Shifts is different. It's, you know, from the get-go, it feels a little more electronic. It's kind of the first time they go really heavy on synths. But it feels also like if this is a band that's never really played that way with synthesizers, it also feels like they've mastered them immediately. Like, it sounds really good. One thing that that I feel with this album that is true to all three of the releases is that it feels like Hookworms always tries to take you on a journey on these albums. There's very few pauses between songs, and I actually it seems like there's only one pause in the album between songs, and it's at the halfway point. It's really, it's very soundtracky in a way where, they're just kind of like, you have these long songs, but they're only long because sometimes you have too many parts of just soundscapes or like an echo or, like the song reverberating out, transitioning into the next one. And this is still true in this one. And, My experience with this album is I listened to they released the first two songs as a pre-release, and I listened to them a lot. And I actually was afraid that I would have a little bit of a Tame Impala Currents kind of syndrome where I've listened
early
to the single.
Early single fatigue.
Yeah. But I didn't. But however, it took me two or three listens to actually like get around to this album. But since then it's been, yeah, I'm in. And this is another case where, you know, I can't wait to see them live with these three albums in the repertoire, because you're going to have some great nuances in the show. I think this is a really solid album. And I've seen a lot of chatter online about how people are excited about the album, and how they seem to be pretty big indie darlings. After three albums.
Yeah, I have to say I was, I don't know if the right word is predisposed to dislike this album, but I was ready to kind of dismiss it.
Yeah,
I had been a fan of Pearl Mystic. Like I said, I didn't really get into The Hum, but Hookworms for me had always kind of seemed like and part of it is knowing that the front man, MJ, they all go by initials, was a producer, and they look like five computer programmers, basically, in pictures. And they always look like they'd be rather doing anything than taking these band photos. You know, I got a very cold, sterile feeling from them. And I couldn't imagine that a Hookworms third album was really going to be something that I would be that interested in, if they were going to keep going in this trajectory of a sound that I liked, but I didn't think I needed a third album of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out I was like completely wrong. I think it's a very, very good indie rock album. I'm not ready to call it great, but if I spend more time with it, it's possible. I think the songwriting is really strong. There's a number of songs on here that just surprised me. It's how clear it is. They're hooks. They're not buried under anything. I think the DFA Records reference is spot on. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and said, which band does this album sound the most like, I would say LCD Sound System.
Yeah,
but you know, there's a number of differences with that. I think the only thing I have to say about this album, you know, in any sort of negative way, is that it's just a very, very strong indie rock album. I'm not sure if there's a lot of personality behind the band or these songs. And I'm also not sure that matters.
Yeah.
You know, but I have to say I'm shocked by it. I'm very surprised by how good it is, how much I enjoy it, and how I can see their audience really widening at this point.
I think the audience is going to widen. I think the personality thing, I mean, back to your computer programmer reference. I mean, the first two songs are called Negative Space and Static Resistance, you know, not very, organic sounding song titles. But by the way, those two back to back, amazing.
Yeah. Like, those are great songs.
Yeah, and actually, I did want to bring up that the first four songs are, like, if that was an EP, I'd put it up there as one of the greatest EPs. I mean, the first four songs are so good, and, you know, the Soft Season, the fourth song, is one of the slower Hookworm songs?
It's like a straight up ballad, and I don't think that they have anything resembling that in on their prior two albums.
Yeah, and it's great, right? I mean,
it's great. The MJ is not the strongest singer in the world, and the vocals are kind of plaintive. He almost reminds me a little bit of Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie. Mm-hmm. Not a band that I love. I think this album is better than any Death Cab for Cutie album for sure. But I was surprised to hear him going for it. Like I had read in interviews that he had a lot of trepidations about his voice, and his voice is front and center on a lot of these tracks, especially the Soft Season.
And that's a good point. Like in Pearl Mystique and The Hum, his voice is kind of more in the background. I don't know how to put it, but the noise is kind of more prominent to his voice. This is much different. His voice comes much more front and center, and it's much clearer what he's singing. It's also much cleaner. Mm-hmm. I think their sound in general on this album is a little cleaner, not as noisy. But there's also like this constant with Hookworm's albums is they have this this organ sound on a lot of songs mm-hmm. in all their albums. And when that organ sound kicks in, I get very excited because it almost feels like their trademark. It's like, oh, we're in a Hookworm's album. I don't know. It gets me pretty amped. I really like this album. This has been a really good music week for me with, you know, just listening to those two albums throughout this week.
I think we're off to a pretty good year based on a lot of our reviews here so far. You know, on our goal with this podcast is not to talk about music we don't want to talk about. So we review albums that we're interested in, and we hope to be always giving positive reviews. I mean, that's we're reviewing things that we're interested in, so we're likely going to be more positive than not, right?
Yeah.
But I think when you proposed this album as something we talk about this week, I was not that excited about it. And I am really happy that we took the time to do this. What about this song? It's maybe the sixth song on the album, Each Time We Pass.
Yeah.
That song is like basically a pop song.
It is.
The female vocalist on it, I'm blanking on her name right now. She's in a band that has been produced by NJ before, and I really love that song. It's like a beautiful. It almost sounds like Simple Minds in the '80s or something like that. And I would never accuse them of a band that's like selling out or anything like that. There's a dignity to what they're doing with these songs. I think it's just from, more confidence. And also I don't exactly know lyrically what's going on in this album, but I definitely am picking up on some themes of depression and aging and also male body image, which is something that you don't see in songs very often. And so I'm thinking, you know, there's a lot of reasons for why the changing attitudes in this band might lead to a sound that is much more direct and crisp and just kind of like leaving all your insecurities behind because you're worried about looking foolish. They don't seem to care about that anymore.
Yeah. This song, Each Time We Pass, and the last song, Shortcomings, is an example of why at my first listen of the full album, I was kind of taken aback because while I was really into the kind of DFA Records vibes of the first two songs that they had pre-released, those two songs, like you said, felt more poppy, and I was kind of like, wow, the same band that put out Pearl Mystique, but at the same time, there was this, it still felt to, right now when I listen to them, it still feels like a Hookworms album. And no, I agree with you. Each Time We Pass, and I put Shortcomings in there too, are just great pop songs. Shortcomings is weird in a way. There's like something going on with the chords. Like it's a little weird, but yeah, I really liked it.
One thing that is interesting to take into account and might have to do with the, dare we say it, macro shift on this album. This is a studio-based band. All the members have decided to keep their day jobs. They kind of are an insular unit that works in Leeds. And the studio was flooded at, I believe, the very end of 2015. And completely destroyed. Oh. And they had to raise money and build a new space from scratch. The entire home was flooded. And I wonder if there's been some kind of reckoning moments with the band. I think, you know, something super traumatic like that happening in your life is definitely coming out in the music. This, yeah. I would also say this album feels like a complete piece of work to me. I mean, it takes you, I really like the sequencing of it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's constantly surprising. I'm definitely going to keep listening to this album into the next month and probably throughout the whole year. I mean, if this doesn't come close to making my top 10, then it's probably going to be a really, really good year for music. Yeah. It feels like, I don't think it's as good as OK Computer, but if you like something like OK Computer, like a complete statement from a rock band, then I think this is something that you're really going to enjoy.
I mean, you know, I'm really impressed by, like, Pearl Mystique, as we said, was really well reviewed and really put them on the map. And they were really famous for their live show. I think they had a big coming out party in the US at CMJ, where apparently they put on a really, really great show. And listening to their music, you could, and then the hum, you could kind of see, and I guess that's where you were going, is like, do I need a third album? I know what this band is. It's kind of a, I don't need more of that sound. I could just listen to those two albums over and over. And this, you know, is a shift, and they do it so well. Like, it's almost like a genre exercise. And I try not to read too much about the albums before we review them, but I did read or saw something about MJ saying it just didn't make much sense for us to do another noise psychedelic album. It's just like, basically, what's the point, right? And I kind of admire that. Like, there's a lot of bands I like that still stick with the sound, and, you know, I love it because I love the sound. But, you know, you compare it to OK Computer, if you think about what Kid A did after, and you compared it to OK Computer. I'm not comparing it to Kid A. Everybody calm down. But what I'm saying is, like, we're talking about a band.
Calm down.
We're talking about a band like Radiohead that, you know, tries to reinvent themselves pretty often, right? And Hookworms, I don't know what the next release will be like, but I mean, between album 2 and 3, this is a little bit of a departure that is done really, really well.
I have to say, I didn't think I needed the third Hookworms album, but I definitely think that I need a fourth.
I agree. Yeah, I can't wait to see the fourth.
Well, let us know if you agree or disagree with our takes this week. Hit us up at Juicebox Music Podcast on Facebook. Give us those 5-star reviews on iTunes, right? They're coming in, Nick, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great reviews so far. Keep it up. I don't know. I guess we mentioned this last time, but we only have a few more weeks to make it to the new and noteworthy podcast. So if you believe we belong there, yeah, give us a review.
Next week, we're going to have something really cool for you. We might even be podcasting in person soon, right, Nick?
Right. Well, yeah, I think it's more than likely.
Stay tuned for that. Yeah. That's going to be huge.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week.